Hey there, friends. Welcome back to .NET Conf. My name is Jeff Fritz.
I'm Maria Nagaga.
And we're going to be talking about .NET going open source and how you can get involved and do a little bit of open source contributions yourself.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Maria. Why don't you kick us off here?
First thing we're going to be talking about is the Microsoft open source story.
Sure.
How far we've come from. So we're going to go back to the beginning, and you know Scott talked about this earlier today. We've been doing it for a couple of years now.
Yeah, it's amazing. When people talk about Microsoft and open source, they don't realize that there's a long, rich history here. We've got this cool timeline that we shared earlier today, and we want to go back to it. We started sharing source of .NET all the way back in 2001. Gosh, that's actually right about when we started .NET, right?
Yeah, and was way before I even thought about becoming a programmer. So it's been around for a long time.
Now you're showing my age here, Maria. So in 2004, though, we saw Mono enter the scene, and that was open source right from the get-go from our friends at Xamarin at the time.
Yeah, bring us to new audiences.
Oh, yeah. And 2008, we started publishing that reference source, right? It's at reference source.microsoft.com.
Yes, it is.
So real good place that you can see all the source for all of .NET on the web.
And it's an interesting story about that. So when we did that, we initially did it to give people the opportunity to just use the source code as they would like, but they weren't really contributing back yet, were they?
No, we couldn't take contributions back into .NET. But, right, 2012, what did we do in 2012? Of course, we open sourced ASP.NET and we introduced TypeScript.
Yeah.
So big changes, and we were on CodePlex at the time. And we started seeing contributions coming back into ASP.NET. A big change for us.
And then we came into the .NET Foundation.
Yeah, the .NET Foundation started, and then .NET Core, right? In November of 2014, we open sourced .NET Core, and we started talking about Roslyn and bringing that into the stack here. Big changes, big moves, and also an interesting thing to note here is look at how the time has shrunk, right? We went three years, four years, 2 years, and now just another year and a half, 2 years since 2014, more big changes, right?
Yeah, and I think 2014 was when I actually got reintroduced to .NET. You know, I had been working here for a couple of years, actually only a year and a half, and then I read this article about being able to use .NET outside Windows, and I was like, I need to prove that. And I went and I got my Mac out and I built my first ASP.NET application outside Windows. And that was amazing. And I did this in front of students. They were excited. They're like, no way. And they all went and got everything. It was an amazing experience.
Oh, yeah. So what do we have for today? Is there a final flag there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So .NET Core everywhere, just like you were talking about, right? So everywhere from mobile phones with Xamarin, right, in the high-end servers with .NET Core, ASP.NET Core, and then the RTM, June 27th, as we learned from Scott Hunter the other day. Great stuff to see happening. A lot of action and excitement happening in the .NET ecosystem.
Yep.
It's all open source. Great stuff.
Great stuff. And like, with that brings a lot of questions. You know, what does this mean, right? And we're going to discuss that because when you talk to different audiences, this is actually a conversation that comes up quite a bit. I think you've probably experienced it as well. Yeah.
Yeah. There's when you start to talk open source, people start to ask questions about licenses and the sources out there on GitHub. Well, what does that mean? What do I actually get that's supported? And how does that work with Visual Studio? So let's
go ahead and look at that.
Yeah. So support, right? We're going to continue. Microsoft is going to continue to support the same DLLs, the same libraries, the same tools that are open source out of the box. You're going to have the same licensing, the same support, just as you had before when you're using those tools that come with Visual Studio. That's pretty straightforward. You get the same thing you always have. It's just you're going to get that peek behind the scenes at the source code if you'd like to. We're going to allow you to make new features if you'd like. If you have a feature that you think will work for .NET, you can put that together and submit it to us through our open source repositories, and we may accept it and add it to .NET. And of course, we've got engineering standards, documentation standards that we need to uphold so that all of our customers get great quality tools and libraries. So if you submit something to work with us, we've got to make sure it meets those standards so that everybody gets a great product.
And coming off that, people also about source code. You know, it's available for use and for reference.
Yeah.
So you actually have the opportunity now to actually take that source code and start working on it as you would like. And I think a really great example of people who have done this, like Ben Adams, for example, and what he's done with Kestrel, making it faster, and we'll look more, you know, Scott talked about that earlier. And then it's also about contributing, and this is a really thing that's really close to my heart. It's giving people the opportunity to grow the project and actually add new features. It's giving you the opportunity to make it your own. And it's also really great for building communities, because like I see coding clubs in New York where they come into the Microsoft office, and these are all individuals from all over the New York area, and they start just building projects using the open source part. And it's just a beautiful thing to do.
Oh, it's exciting.
It's so exciting. You're seeing all, it's creating opportunities for so many people to start building on the platform.
Absolutely.
And that's like, we want to talk about getting involved right now. So
sure.
Let's go ahead and switch over to the repos.
Yes, let's switch over to my machine right now. And let's take a look at how you can get involved with these repositories, with these organizations on GitHub. So if we switch over in the back room there, you should be seeing now, there we go. There's a couple of high-level organizations on the GitHub website that you should be aware of where you can jump in and start working with .NET Source. The first one I want to show is ASP.NET, right? The ASP.NET organization at github.com/ASP.NET is where you can see all of the source code that's being worked on for those server-side capabilities that you expect from ASP.NET, right? This is ASP.NET Core and all the changes that are going on. So you can log in here and scroll down and look at all the different libraries and repositories that are being updated and maintained live by Microsoft engineers, program managers, and community members who are submitting pull requests. So there's a lot of different repositories here, and you know, you can also jump in and look at the .NET Foundation organization. And this is where you're gonna see things about the .NET Core framework, the documentation for that. The Roslyn compiler is here, right? The command line interface, Core CLR, really big projects, and they're available for you to look at and contribute to. And as we saw from Scott's graphs that he showed this morning, that CoreFX library, that CoreFX repository, has more contributions from the community than it does from Microsoft engineers, because so much of the community wants to get involved with that core framework. I want to show there's also a the Visual Studio Code repository at github.com/Microsoft/VS Code. If you come here, it jumps right into a repository so you can see the source code for Visual Studio Code. And then if you go down here, you can see documentation and information about contributing and getting involved with Visual Studio Code. Now, there's a lot I'm covering here and looking at with these organizations. I'm going to look at F-Sharp here, and you can see everything about the open edition of F-Sharp. If you have any questions about these things on GitHub or that Maria and I are going to talk about, please, there's a button somewhere on the
right
video.
Yeah,
over there by Maria. Press that button to ask a question, send it along, and our friends here at Channel 9 will put it up, and we'll be able to answer your questions. And if you have any comments you want to share on Twitter, we'll pick up on those too, and we'll answer them. So F-Sharp is out here as well. Xamarin, we just talked
about
the Xamarin acquisition. All the Xamarin repositories are here as well, so that you can look at how you work with .NET on an iPhone, on an Android device, on a Windows phone. It's all here in these repositories. Now, when you click into one of these repositories, there's source code. So here's the docs repository for ASP.NET. And down below, there's information about how to get started. What do you want to do? What things you should read and be aware of in order to contribute? And all of our repositories have a couple of files that are key to getting started. First that I want to call out is license.txt. And this has the information about the software license that we use for the source code that you work with on GitHub. So you can see for the documentation, we use the Apache license when you download source code from GitHub. When we publish it, it has a different license. It has a Microsoft license at that point. But the other piece that I want you to see here is also a contributing MD. And this tells you all the directions that you need to follow in order to contribute to a Microsoft repository and have it accepted. So there's information here about how to build the site, how to build content, the structure, and their process. And it's important you follow the process, because there's a program manager and a staff here at Microsoft that are going to be looking at your changes, your pull request, and deciding whether or not to accept it and if it meets our standards. And they'll provide feedback to you so you can change and submit that appropriately. Let me move on here. There's engineering standards that you may see in some repositories. This is at the root of the ASP.NET home repository that tells you here's the different changes that you need to put into your code if you submit something that's going to be executable. So you're going to want to run through this and read it, be very clear on how to contribute code if you're going to contribute code to one of these .NET repositories. And finally, the easiest way to get involved with ASP.NET, with .NET, these repositories, take a look at our issues list. There's a lot of issues here where people are describing, we'd like to do this with our code, or we'd like the documentation to contain this type of information. Take a look at it. Maybe there's something you can comment on, provide some feedback, or maybe you saw an issue. Key it in here and submit it, and the team will work with you to try and resolve it or improve documentation or the product.
And I actually have a really good issue story. Like, when I was getting started and I didn't really know what to do, and I would actually put some of the issues in, David Fowler was so great at getting back to you almost immediately.
David Fowler, one of the lead engineers on
ASP.NET.
One
of the lead engineers was actually responding to my issue. And I was like, that's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. And it was a very simple issue. I just needed to make sure that my libraries were in order. But I sent a message at 2 a.m. New York time. And by 2:05, David Fowler had responded to it.
So he's here on the West Coast, so it's 11 p.m. He works on Fowler Standard
Time.
It's slightly different time zone than many of us work on.
But so, I think that's a great way to actually say that you are having actual conversations with people in the engineering team and in the community.
Yeah.
So you are talking to them to build this product.
Absolutely. So why don't we go back to the slides on Maria's machine now? We'll flip over to that. There we go.
Yeah, and the way I kind of want to think about it, because some people that I work with have been working with GitHub for a long time, but some people might not know how to get started. But the way to think about it is that you find a repo. Maybe it's one of our repos. Maybe it's another .NET repo that you would like to contribute to it.
Sure.
Make a copy of it, you know, fork it, save it to your machine, and always make sure that you're updating back and forth. But when you're ready to actually push it back to the main repo, sync it, right? And then make sure that everything is in order. That's how you make a contribution. This is a great slide from Free Code Camp. And those of you who haven't heard of it, Free Code Camp is a great online presence. They teach you how to get up and running on almost anything.
Yeah.
So this is one of their amazing images that they put together by Rafael Rodriguez. And I do suggest go onto their website and learn more about GitHub when you want to get started.
Yeah. There's a lot of things. You can really get in with GitHub deep, and there's a lot of in-depth technical things, real advanced minutia that you could get entrenched in and embedded in. But this really breaks it down and makes it simple. Make your changes, push it back to your copy, and then you can pull that back into the final repository where it'll be approved. And that's what we call a pull request.
Yep.
So.
It's a good way.
Yeah. Moving on.
So we really want to talk about contributing to Microsoft open source. In particular, let's talk a bit about licenses.
Yeah.
That's something that people talk about quite a bit. They get hung up, right?
They get hung up, and there's lawyer speak inside these documents. And as a developer reading it, it's scary.
Oh, yeah. I have no idea what it means most of the time. No.
So there's a couple of different licenses that Microsoft uses in our documents. The first one we should talk about is the contribution license agreement, right?
Yeah.
So the .NET Foundation, in order for you to contribute code to us, the documentation to us, we need you to sign and agree to this contribution license agreement.
Yep.
And it's real simple to get. There's a bot that'll come up when you send a pull request that says, hey, you need to sign this agreement just to make sure everybody's clear. And it's simple. It's a DocuSign document. You go there and you'll click through. And all it does is say, the source code that I'm providing, it's mine to freely contribute. My employer and nobody else has claims on it except for me, and I am donating it, I'm giving it to the .NET Foundation to be included in this repository.
And that's a big thing, because people do ask those questions a lot, like, why do I need to sign this? And you've just pointed out, you want to make sure that your employer doesn't have claims on it. You want to give it back to the project.
And the .NET Foundation actually takes another step when we get ready to ship a product. They go through and they scan all of our repositories to make sure that there's nothing in there that is actually stolen from another project, that's source code that somebody hijacked from somewhere else and embedded inside of here. We want to make sure that all of this is original work, that is freely contributed, that is unique, and proper for us to deliver to our customers.
Yeah, it's like school with plagiarism. Remember when like you submit your essay and you're just like, please, no.
Yeah, absolutely. This is important.
And since we've actually talked about contributor licenses, I think we need to talk about how people should start their own projects as well, because that's one thing that you'd love to do, is it to make sure that people are building their own projects.
Sure.
So we want to talk a little bit more about why you should be starting your own project, or why you should even think about it, right? Mm. Like, that's a huge, like, you know, you have this great idea. Why? You know, because creating your own project is fun, right?
Absolutely. You don't need to be a big corporation like Microsoft. You can be just a kid out of college. Kid in college.
Yeah. Anyway, like, I actually have Hood.io, which is actually a really light web framework for back-end applications, and they really focus on creating back-ends for developing countries, so places that have limited connectivity.
Yeah.
And they're a group of four people.
Four?
Four people spread right around the world.
And they're making big changes.
They're making big changes.
Wow.
So they actually went around and like, we have this great idea. And now they've built an entire community that exists not only in the United States and in Europe, but exists in Rwanda, it exists in South America. And I think that's a really good thing. And it's all brought together by an open source project.
Yeah.
Right? So
Very
that's one of the reasons why you want to do it, right? And then you have to think about what you want to do, right? And then that comes back to the fact that we have so many different kinds of repos that people can actually start working off.
Yeah.
So to actually have like so many different opportunities to start building things. So if you want to do something around Xamarin Forms, you can do that now,
Absolutely.
Can't you?
Yeah. And nothing says that it has to be completely unique.
100%.
Yeah. Start something that makes you happy, that you can grow with and learn from maybe.
Oh, yes, because I actually met a student at a hackathon who wanted to build, and this was during the time of Windows Phone.
Oh,
he wanted
yeah.
to build an open source project that just basically created unique templates for you.
Okay.
For the Windows. So it's like every single time you went to Visual Studio, you know, you had the standard black or white, but we actually would just make it a way that it would make it more exciting for people to build Windows applications.
Oh, cool.
And I thought that was a really cool way. And it's just a simple thing. He's just playing around with colors, adding some images, but just to give a completely different experience.
I like that because whenever I opened a new app that I downloaded on my Lumia phone, there were some things that were always so identical between one application and the next. And I felt like I was constantly looking at the same application, just with different data inside of it, right? It's cool to hear someone actually taking that step to say, let's make something that makes us more unique, more fun to use.
More fun.
Very cool.
It's a really cool way. So I think it's a way, when we're talking, kind of targeting here, is that it doesn't have to be groundbreaking.
No.
It can be anything.
Absolutely.
It can be whatever you want it to be.
And you know what? It may start simple.
Yeah.
But you may find a niche and say, you know what? This is something important. And then you pivot, right? That's what they call it in the Valley, right?
Pivoting.
And you find that item and you go after it. And then you figure out, oh, here's something cool that we can really make a difference with.
That's because I think that's where Hoodie started. They actually went to Rwanda to start working with small startups. And it's like, we're going to help this one startup figure out their back-end solution.
Okay.
And now they just have an entire framework based on this one idea that said, we're going to help this one startup.
That's very cool to hear.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
And finally is like the how to get involved. Mm. That's a big thing. You know, your project deserves to grow. And we're going to talk about this a little bit more.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be talking about the importance of contributors. But how do you get people involved in what you're doing? And like with Microsoft, we have a variety of ways. We have the stand-up calls.
Oh, yeah.
We have the blogs that you write, which are absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
All right. But we have different ways. We have Hanselman always talking about the product.
Sure.
So we
sure.
need to figure out, like, even in your own simple project, never be alone. Make sure you have as many people as you can.
It's kind of depressing when you're the only person committing code and you're not getting feedback, right?
Yep.
You need to have at least two people to get things moving.
Oh, yeah. It comes back to, like, the build demo that we built. If I didn't have you to bounce feedback on, I was going to be stuck for hours.
I was called in and, hey, take a look. I'm not quite sure. This doesn't make sense. I need another set of eyes. Yeah, it was great to have that collaboration.
And that's what open source brings for you.
Yes.
And I think that's also done a lot for us within Microsoft as well.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant. And the thing is that you still need to choose a license.
Yeah, here we go, back to the licenses again. Okay, so what works for you, right? So there's three licenses that this website that our, I think our friend Phil Hack put this together, ChooseALicense.com. I encourage you to check it out. There's three main licenses that we like to talk about. The first one, the MIT license. Very simple, very permissive in what you can do with the code. And people have to provide attribution back, but they can't hold you liable. Very simple. jQuery, .NET Core uses this, Rails. The second one, if you're concerned about patents, Apache 2.0 is the one that you need to be concerned about, the one you need to consider. It's very permissive, it's very similar to MIT, but it provides a grant of patent rights from contributors to the users. Now this is important that because patents for some folks are a big business. Yeah. So you may want to use Apache if you are concerned about how patents are transferred and reused. So Android, Apache, Swift, they all use this one. Now, the last one, right, this GNU GPL, the GNU GPL V3, right, that GPL, what's GPL? It's the General Public License,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is.
I keep confusing that. So it's a copyleft license, and that's interesting, that term, copyleft.
It's a weird one. Remember we had this conversation about it? I was like, I don't quite understand what this is.
Yeah, so I did some reading on this. So they didn't want to call it copyright, because when you copyright something, you need to grant rights exclusively to people.
Exactly.
But they didn't want to grant rights. They just wanted to say anybody could use it.
Yeah.
And they couldn't put it into the public domain because the public domain has a whole nother set of rights and capabilities around it. So they couldn't use public domain. So they created their own license that's copyleft. It removes all copyright claims on it that says anybody can modify this. They can distribute the code or a derivative of that. And if they make changes, they must contribute it back to the original repository, to the original project. So we like to say that that's a viral license, right? Because anything that it touches or somebody integrates with, they become GPL as well.
So it's like code going viral?
Yeah.
Ah,
yeah.
Cool. So it's not only for YouTube.
Yeah, Bash, GIMP, Privacy Badger use this GNU GPL V3 license. So check out ChooseALicense.com when you want to start a project and start thinking about licenses.
And because kind of explain, like the MIT license, I started noticing more when I was looking at web templates. It would always pop up.
Yeah.
So that's probably code.
No, that's a great example. Web templates are something that, I mean, let's face it, when you're sending angle brackets and curly braces for CSS and JavaScript down the wire, everybody sees your code anyway.
Yeah, they do.
You can't hide it. Even if you try and obfuscate it with a minifier or uglifier, they still see it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, use MIT so people have a right to use it and modify it going forward.
Okay.
Cool.
That's a good one. So, like, for example, would startups really focus on using Apache then? If they were beginning to build something?
That sounds like a pretty good idea. If they want to be able to patent things going forward, and I've certainly worked for a startup in the past that had patents and wanted to protect those. If we open sourced things, we would have used Apache.
Okay, because this actually really brings us back to like the next thing we're going to talk about, because we've talked about licenses.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I think we should also talk about contributors, because we talked about like licenses are one bit. So you have your licenses, you have everything in place. So you're ready to start getting contributors in.
Yeah, so why don't we go over to My Machine and we could talk about ways to get contributors here. Can we switch over, switch feeds? My friends in the back room there, I think they're enjoying lunch.
Yeah, they must be enjoying lunch. Oh, there we go.
Hey,
yay.
Fantastic. So you were showing me some of these websites here, first timers only. What do these folks do, Maria?
Oh, so this is it was brought with and made with friendliness by Kent C. Dodds and Scott Hanselman.
I know that guy.
Oh, yeah, so do I. I think we work for him, kind of.
Kind of.
Kind of, yeah. So they actually thought that we need to be able to create a space where first timers can actually start getting ready. Like this should be your first pull request.
Okay.
Because one of the things that tends to happen is that things marked relatively easy is relative. So something that's easy for you, Jeff, is not going to be easy for me.
I know you're a good developer.
A good developer. But there's some things that it's different depending on years of experience and where you're coming from.
Oh, now you're saying I'm experienced.
You're experienced.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. But that's the one thing that we need to start focusing on is that the way we tag things needs to be important.
Okay.
So you need to really look at what does first timers only mean.
Okay.
And if you scroll down, like there have been so many people who have done this, which you will look at, like Up for Grabs has done a really great job. But if you look at some of the comments that people have left, like, thank you so much for doing this, you know? I've been wanting to do this for a long time.
Yeah.
And this is not only coming from people who are contributors, it's also coming from maintainers. So look at Bert over there. And I got a chance to meet Bert in Hong Kong.
Okay.
I can't remember the project, but it felt hostile because I didn't know the contribution rules of the project. I got remarks. So it can be very negative.
Yeah.
But creating a nice safe space for developers and just adding a tag could be the first point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's another one here we want to talk about, Up for Grabs.
Yeah. I think this one actually came out of, I feel it might be a fail hack thing.
Is it?
It might
okay.
be. Internet, please correct us if we're wrong.
Yeah, please, there's questions here. You can submit, you know, use the buttons below, send us a tweet. We'd love to hear what you have to say about open source.
Yeah, so this is actually, you have a select set of filter tags that are just up for grabs. And
okay.
we have them on our repo, I believe.
Yeah,
well,
we do.
Where you can just go and grab something and get ready. Because we're doing a lot of things within Microsoft.
Absolutely.
But we have so many great ideas coming from the community.
Yeah.
So this is just showing a whole bunch of different things. And you can notice that you have everything from
beginner friendly. Oh, there's OctaKit.
Yeah, OctaKit. I also have, they've also started putting things like beginner friendly up there, right? So if you go down, there's one, help wanted.
Yeah.
Right? These are all different kinds of tags that people are beginning to put up there. And these are just the repos that are available. Like homebrew, help wanted, right?
Yeah. There's Orleans. We were talking about Orleans earlier today.
So it's just creating a space where maintainers and people within the community are beginning to understand how can we get efficient help from people.
Oh, here's easy and jump in.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And that's the thing, because I was talking to Kenzie Dodds, and everyone should follow him. He's a great person in creating inclusive environments on Twitter. And he said his first pull request, it took him hours to actually look for it. But then when he found it, he was like, this is so easy. It should be easy to find as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important thing.
Okay.
Yeah, because I've been in situations where I've looked for 3, 4 hours, 5, 6, and then before you know it, somebody else has got it in.
Yeah. Yeah, you take too much time, and then somebody else comes in and takes care of that thing that you wanted to do. And there was one more we wanted to look at, IssueHub.io. This looks like it's similar to what we saw there on Up for Grabs.
It is. But what it does, it's kind of, I feel like it targets a little bit better. It's more specific.
Okay.
So you know from the get-go what needs to be done. So you know it's documentation, right? You don't know if it's easy, you don't know if it's hard, but you know it's documentation.
Sure, sure.
You have things like beginners and accessibility, and this is a tag that I'm hoping to see more and more of.
Yeah, that would be nice. I mean, accessibility is one of those things. I know, when I was younger, there I go again, talking about age. When I was younger and I was building websites, I would never think about, well, how do I have to translate this and make it work for folks outside the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I have to make it work easily for folks who might not have a great vision, right? And different browsers. And accessibility is a bit of a challenge.
It's a challenge.
And a lot of us don't think about it initially when we're starting some user interface.
We don't. And actually, my friend, Saran, she did an amazing, Saran over at Code Newbie. Like, if you're just learning how to code, or if you have a friend who wants to learn how to code, go into Code Newbie. And she did this amazing talk at OSCON where she talked about accessibility. She said the thing when we're, especially around the web, is that you want to be a snowflake.
A snowflake, okay.
And this is what she said. Stop being a snowflake.
Mm.
We need to start creating environments and experiences that everyone can have.
Okay.
Like if my bandwidth is lower, because I'm from Uganda, and like the internet can be spotty, can be amazing in some areas, can be really spotty in other areas. We should be able to build systems, and we should be able to think about our open source projects, like how will our page render if it's a lower bandwidth? What do we get rid of?
Oh,
should we be using more vanilla JavaScript? What should we be doing to create more inclusive experiences for the people who are looking at our stuff?
That's a good
point.
And
I think we need to think about that also when we think about building our projects online and being open source maintainers as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, I hadn't thought too much about lower bandwidth in some of those areas of the world. That is an interesting point.
It's an interesting point. I went without internet for about, like, being from New York and being incredibly spoilt with the internet that I have. And then when I went home and I was on my parents' farm and I was just like, I can't get onto anything.
How did you live?
It was terrible. It was terrible. It was amazing. You enjoyed the air. Mm. But it was, as soon as I was back online, I felt like a piece of me had come back.
Mm.
And it just things that we just don't think about, because I couldn't even load like Facebook or Twitter.
Okay,
or I couldn't load any of these.
If my daughter didn't have Skype and wasn't able to call her friends at night, there'd be a problem there.
There'd be a problem. Oh yeah.
Okay. So those are a couple of the different websites to help people get in and get started, dive into a project. Why don't we go back to the slides then, I think, so we can take a look at...
I want to talk about why it's important.
Oh, yeah.
Why is it important to have contributors?
Sure.
And the big thing, and this is from Charlotte Is, I don't know her last name, but she started Your Pull Request. And she
Not My Pull Request, it's a website
called Your Pull Request.
Okay.
Go check it out. They focus on working with big companies and writing better documentation. But she had this thing called maintaining and contributing is hard.
Mm.
And then she broke it down is that projects are huge. And this goes back to when I started looking into being an open source person, was like, I would go through these repos and it would be hours and hours. And I was like, of looking for something that I could do.
Right, and those folks who are already in working on those projects, they've got that, we call that tribal knowledge, right?
Yes.
Where they already have almost another vocabulary around their code.
Oh, yeah, and you're just like, where do I even start asking these questions? But we should be able to ask those kind of questions, like, I don't understand this acronym. Mm. Could somebody tell me? And then also, no explanations. Like, I remember the first open source project I worked on was in university, and I can't remember the name of the project, but the comment was, this does not work.
That's not very helpful.
It wasn't helpful. So we didn't even know where to start with this. So we took hours, we looked at it, and it was something that we needed for an assignment. And we just didn't know where to get started. So being able to actually also have proper explanations is very important. And then also marked simple. We talked about it. And how other places like your first pull request and all these things are making able for people to do things like this.
Yeah.
And then the saddest thing is that sometimes you're too slow, right?
Sure.
And this happens to me all the time.
Mm.
Like sometimes you just maybe solve it a little bit slower than everybody else. But we've talked about like all these things, but being one person on a project is really lonely. It is such a lonely experience.
Yeah.
And then you have to start achieving growth. But what tends to happen with growth is that you get someone who is kind of the same as you.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
So you just go to a friend, maybe you met them at a conference, maybe you went to school together, maybe in the office next door.
Sure.
But you're working on the exact same thing.
Yeah, you have the same perspectives, you have the same culture, you have the same mindset.
Yep.
It's not a different perspective.
Not a different perspective at all.
Okay.
And then you're just like, okay, we have a bit of growth. It's the two of us.
Yeah.
But then we need the next level. We need a level standard of experience. So this is when you go to people who are like you, but just have more years or have worked on different projects.
Okay.
So you start inviting people as board advisors and do your code reviews. But what tends to happen? Still, the same mindset of people.
Sure, sure. And they've got those great glasses.
I know. So I just basically had like experience. They have glasses and then they're slightly different because they have different color ties.
Okay.
Right?
Okay,
so
I get
just
it.
It's, like, it's basically, you're different, but you're basically still the same people. You're still in your own bubble.
Okay.
But when I think about it, when you're building an open source project or why contributors are so important is that you want to represent all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I made this slide while I was watching Zootopia.
Yeah.
I think you can kind of tell.
Great movie.
Great movie. But it kind of spoke to what it was. Like, you should have people representing all. Like, they should come from all kinds of backgrounds.
Sure.
They should be newbies. They should have experience. They could be designers. They could be like, I've been experienced in Python, and I'm kind of trying to figure out how to use F#. Because it's also a strong compute language. So those are different kind of things that we need to start bringing into our open source project.
So it, as you want to take that open source project and grow it and get it outside of just your neighborhood, right? Your little neighborhood of folks, that's when you have to get uncomfortable and start talking to folks who aren't like you, who have different perspectives, don't work in the same languages, the same environments as you, and get them into the fold so that you can do that next level of things with your project.
Yeah, and kind of talking about what Scott was talking about during his keynote when we looked at the boot camp and what people are learning.
Yeah.
And then why I'm going and meeting all these boot camp people to actually find out, you know, what are you learning?
Okay.
How can we get involved?
Yeah.
How can you bring you into the fold? So I was talking to someone over at Coding Dojo and he had some issues. I was like, thank you, can you go and flag that on GitHub?
Yeah.
Because that is important.
Sure.
Having from someone who's built curriculums in different languages
okay.
to come back and say, this is some information that we need. That's very impactful because we are representing all sorts of people.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Very cool. So, hey, if you have any questions for us, right, use the Ask a Question button down below or send us a message on Twitter and make sure you use hashtag .NETconf so we can see it and we'll answer your questions during this session.
Yeah.
Okay, so we want to get more inclusive, supporting and growing communities.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's a big one.
Now, are you talking about not just those developers who are contributing, but are you talking about the users of the project?
Yeah, the users okay. of the project, the developers who are contributing.
Okay.
We need to be able to support and enable them to grow on their own.
Sure.
So it would be great if you are able to build a .NET project based on one of our repos and make it grow. Not everything has to be based on us.
Sure, sure. Okay. So what do we have?
Someone, I think, oh yeah, we got a thank you. That's pretty cool.
Oh, very cool. Morrow says, thank you guys. This is really interesting. I'll get a cup of coffee and start contributing. Cool. Thanks a lot, Morrow.
Thank you so much. So let's talk about that. Like, there are different ways that people create supportive environments. So I think a huge one for us is the code of conduct.
Oh, yes. Oh my gosh. That's important.
The code of conduct. And as you know, like I was talking, because I presented at OSCON this mm-hmm. year, absolutely loved it. It was called The Fearless Contributor.
Okay.
And how we create more inclusive environments for developers and maintainers. Yeah. And I talked to 22 maintainers, and that was a really good piece of advice that you gave me to go out and actually talk to maintainers. And one of the things I talked about was, do you have a code of conduct? And I was so happy that most of them did, and the mm-hmm. one person who didn't, actually added it while we were talking.
Oh, cool.
Which was really, really cool.
And the other interesting thing that you said there, and I don't want to skip over it, is that a lot of these people who run projects, they're just other developers. They're other IT folks like us who they're looking for other people to help them. They're looking for another voice in their ecosystem.
100%.
Yeah.
And the one thing that we found was when I was doing this research is that I asked them, did you have any hostile remarks. Mm. And a lot of people who had them from the beginning, no issues whatsoever.
When they had their code of conduct from the beginning of their project.
Yes.
No issues with
no it. Issues.
Very cool to hear
no
that.
No issues. And the few people who had like minor issues where they had to either kick somebody out or enforce it were people who introduced it later.
Okay.
And by that time, the project has become so big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, and trying to unplug and push Skippy out of your project, that's got to be tricky and painful to do.
Yeah, and said it was also painful for him to see that kind of reaction for someone that he had been working with for such a long time. Mm. And one of the things, like, there are so many to pick from.
Really?
I can't say that I have a favorite
okay.
code of conduct.
But those are some good names.
Those are some good names. And this is an interesting thing, that if you actually look at the code of conducts on a lot of repos or open source projects,
okay.
I noticed that the code of conduct from JS Conference was being used in the repos.
Really? So the code of conduct from a conference was adapted and modified for use by Apache, by Django, by the GNU project, for their projects, for their software. So we've gone from those in-person interactions and said, hey, we're going to apply those same things to code.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Which is good because it also gives a human feeling to what it means.
Yes. Oh gosh.
This is a great question.
So there's a question here from Carol. What tips do you have for newcomers? What should they look for in a repository themselves?
That's a really good question. So the big tip I have for newcomers is, first, thank you for even just thinking about doing it.
Oh, okay.
That's a really good, really great place.
You got to start somewhere.
And there are a couple of resources. I find Code Newbie is a great place for newcomers to feel nice and safe.
Okay.
Because you can just basically tweet them and they will get back to you. They will actually say, oh, have you heard about what this person's doing? Or have you talked to this person? Or have you seen this kind of repo? Also, think about the repos you'd like to do.
So this is Code Newbie. I have it here on my machine. If we can switch
over
to that.
Yeah, could we switch over?
Here it comes.
Yeah.
Okay, so the most supportive community of programmers and people learning to code. Cool. And they've got a Slack and a Twitter chat.
Yeah, and they have a podcast. Actually, our boss has been on that podcast a number of times, Scott Hanselman.
Very cool. Yes. Yehuda Katz, he's a good guy. I know who
he is. So many different people. And another thing about how do you get started, find a repo. I would tell you go find a repo, but that could be overwhelming.
Yeah.
Go to some of the resources that we've showed you. Let's look at the starting point. If you go back to the starting points, which I'll show in a bit, when you look at Up for Grabs and your first pull request, and Issue Hub.
Yep.
These actually show you great places to get started. Let's say that you're at a code camp or like you're in an after-school program.
Sure.
Go type in JavaScript or C# and see what pops up. Look up Unity. Like a lot of kids are learning Unity these days. See what's out there.
Okay.
Sometimes, and another thing is that it's beyond the code. You have to think about contributing beyond the code, and you talked about that.
Yeah.
We have docs.
Right. There's more than just code. Not just writing docs, but finding issues and submitting those back, because nobody likes to have an issue crop up after they've cut a build, right? So many things that you can do beyond just writing code. Building logos, images, helping with user interface design.
Didn't GitHub start with that? Didn't the Octocat actually come?
I don't know. Was it?
It might have been. I think I asked the question. They're like, yeah, someone from the community helped us out.
Very cool. Okay, so we can go and we can start at some of these sites if you want to get involved and start contributing. And yeah, these don't focus on just code, right? So we highlighted here on Issue Hub the documentation tag, but there's features, tests, write unit tests for some of these. Everybody wants unit tests, so they make sure that their projects work well, right?
And also, don't be afraid to actually flag an issue. A lot of people are scared of that. I was talking to a bunch of newer developers who are like, I don't want to flag an issue because I don't want people to think I don't know.
What do you mean by flag an issue?
So if you actually have an issue and you make an issue up on GitHub,
okay,
and some people are actually afraid to do that. Let's say they've found something or they've got a bunch of bugs.
Sure.
They think it's them. But yet, if they could actually just put it out there or comment on something, they could get a solution.
Okay.
And in that way, we could also learn what we could do better to make that experience.
So let me come back here to, we had the issues list up here from the docs repository. I could search through here if there were any issues about, say, Razor.
Yeah.
And based on what comes back, here's information that I could contribute to, I could comment on and say, oh, it'd be great if we had more documentation about the syntax and participate in this discussion that's going on.
And that's a great one.
Okay.
That's a really, really good way to get started. Like, that's a really great way to get started. Is that learn it, start these conversations.
Sure.
And then before you know it, you're being pulled into conversations.
Yeah.
Or you're being like, oh, Maria actually identified it here.
Mm-hmm.
Look at
mm-hmm.
this. And before you know it, you're getting comfortable in this space, which is so good.
Cool. Okay. Well, thanks for the question.
That's a great question, Carol. Thank you so much.
So why don't we cut back over to the slides?
And kind of talk about conversations.
Yes, right? So we were just talking about starting conversations on issues. But really, in the projects that I've helped run, NuGet among them, when you start having conversations and issues, it starts to run away because it's this long thing. And I really want to have my issues stay focused on something that's shippable, right? Something that is going to be either code, tests, documentation, but we want to do more than just discuss those shippable things, don't we?
Yeah, we do. We actually want to have conversations about the product.
Yeah.
We want to have conversations about the community as well.
Okay.
And how they're responding to it. So Slack is a very popular one at the moment, the Slack channels and being able to have conversations about code.
Sure.
In addition to that, I believe Slack, you can now integrate it with GitHub, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. So you can start to pull information in about pull requests that were submitted and have them pop up in your Slack chat as an integration. Very cool stuff. Look at this. We got a couple questions.
I think Jerry, is that Jerry Nixon, the evangelist? He probably is.
Hello, Jerry. Jerry says, hi, great info. I don't wear a tie. Can I still help? No, but he's got those cool vests that Jerry wears.
Yeah, he does.
Absolutely. Anybody can help. You don't have to wear a tie. It's nice if you wear a tie, but anybody can help out. And it doesn't matter how old you are, how young you are. The code of conducts help to establish that there's no discrimination in any of these things.
100%.
Yeah.
It just makes it's for all.
Absolutely.
Which is such a great word, for all.
It really is the epitome of community that we're trying to drive here.
This is from Abby. Can I develop software with Visual Studio Community and sell the software?
So that's an interesting question. Visual Studio Community is it's a fully licensed product. So you as a developer, you're granted access, a license to Visual Studio Community. If you're a hobbyist, if you have a company that you're using Visual Studio Community in and you make less than a certain number of dollars, certain income level, and you can build and sell, but once you cross those thresholds, we want you to move on to the Professional Edition, which has very much the same features, but at that point, you need to start working with the Professional Edition of Visual Studio, and there's different licensing concerns that come in at that point. And of course, Visual Studio Code, because that's open source, you can always use that for any project, and you can sell products that you write with Visual Studio Code. So
that was a great question.
That was a very good question.
That was a really great question.
And it's those types of concerns that we hear from a number of businesses, from startups who want to get involved and use some of these things that Microsoft has labeled as open source, and they're concerned that there's a gotcha hidden in there somewhere.
Yes, they are. We have that with, because I used to be in evangelism, and we had that a lot with the BizSpark program, where people are like, is this for real?
Yeah.
But like, you've explained it so well.
Well, thank you.
Once you've reached the threshold, it's you know.
At that point, you've been successful. Let's move on to a different licensing model.
Yeah.
So.
And then bringing it back to conversations, Slack is incredibly popular. And one thing about Slack is that it also creates an entire community.
Yes,
around it
does.
And I actually made friends from Slack, which is nice as well, right?
Like very cool.
In these Slack channels, you help someone out, and you just before you know it, you're friends and you're meeting for coffee.
Yes.
Brilliant, right? That goes full
circle.
Google. I love the Google Hangouts that we do.
Yeah, right. The on.net
Google
Hangout, and there's also of course, the ASP.NET community hangout. ASP.NET community stand-up.
Yeah.
That's a hangout. Easy for me to say. I'm so used to typing it because I do the transcriptions for it. So they're both once a week, and it gets the community to see what's going on, to have that conversation.
And I like the way they both approach from different angles. So like John Galloway does an excellent job. He starts the call with celebrating all the things that people have done.
Yes, right.
I think that's absolutely amazing.
The links of the week. And actually, we've seen a number of folks who submit again and again and again. They put stuff out there, and it's almost like a badge of honor. Hey, I was on the ASP.NET Community Hangout.
And that's so huge. And the thing about on.NET is that we're talking to people who are using the product.
Yes.
And I really like it because as a community member, you can look and say, that's how I'm using it. And you talk from anywhere from small startups to bigger companies. So you can actually see how .NET Core and .NET is scaling across all these.
Oh, yeah.
And you can see, I can use that now.
Absolutely.
I can use that now. And the next thing I actually want to point out is Gitter. I love the fact that it's attached right to your GitHub repo.
Mm, yeah.
So you can have conversations right there. And then finally, I want to call out Twitter. Now, Twitter is something I never really thought about using.
I love
Twitter. For conversations around like open source.
Sure.
But it's the best because it's like 140 characters. Yep. You're done.
Get that message out and you're done. You're going to be cut off at 140. Absolutely. But let me come back to Gitter for a second.
Sure.
So there's actually a local study group that started up in my area, the local community college. Couple students who graduated and they're getting out into the industry and they wanted to start talking to each other about the things that they're learning. And they want to go and start using Free Code Camp to learn how to do things in JavaScript and write open source projects and get involved. And I saw these folks start a Gitter, they posted some messages to a meetup, they started a Facebook group, and they're having this really rich conversation all day, every day. Talking about, here's the things that we want to do for our open source projects, or to learn these various things about Node.js or JavaScript. And we're really seeing these folks push each other and encourage each other through simple communication online using a tool like Gitter.
Oh, it's like the modern study group.
It is. It really is.
I would have actually gone to a lot more study groups had they been in that setting. Because the actual thing of going and finding a place and then figuring out if you can't do it in the library, this is just such a great way to do it.
I want to be somewhere where I can have my coffee, have something to munch on while I'm there. Yeah.
Such a great thing. That's a really great thing that they're doing that.
Absolutely.
They're building their own community. They're really a modern study group.
From the ground up. It really is. So, all right. What else do we have?
Oh, we're going to talk about documentation.
Ooh.
This is a big one for me.
Ooh, yeah.
Documentation is a big one for me. And we talked about like people getting started with open source and writing documentation. And I actually do like the idea of people who are newer to something being part of the documentation for an open source project, because they're seeing it from a neutral perspective.
They are. They're coming in with that clean perspective. They don't have any preconceived notions. Yeah, it's a good point.
It's a really good point. Because I remember I went onto a documentation of a particular language.
Okay.
And it said, do you remember when in version point this?
Yeah.
Which is about 5 years ago. And I wasn't even thinking about it. So, but I would have to have knowledge of that.
We come back to that tribal knowledge again.
So, and that's something I call assumed knowledge. And this is actually something that me and my friend Stacey Mulcahy came up with in a conversation.
Okay.
There's this assumed knowledge really around documentation.
Okay.
People already know what they're doing.
Sure.
Or they're like, I assume, like, I constantly try to do that when I'm writing a blog post.
Okay.
That I try not to say, by this time, I assume that you have done.
Stab me.
I know, it's a bad thing that I've been terrible about.
Mm.
But you need to do that. We had a question from Carol, but it flashed off, but hopefully it'll come back. But there's this huge assumed knowledge. And something we need to be aware of is you need to write for all and not for yourself.
Right. I like to write for myself when I'm writing a blog post, because that's something that I can search on myself and say, how did I do that thing that time?
Yeah.
But it's different when I'm writing a product documentation or a project's documentation.
Yeah, you need to write for everyone. So
okay.
I should be able to go to a repo or to go to a documentation page with, you know, little or no knowledge and be able to feel comfortable.
Okay.
While moving over to the next stop, to feel successful. So we have a question from Carol. Hey, I really like ASP.NET Community Standup. Are there any similar online standups with .NET Microsoft team members?
So the on.NET meetup, that happens once a week. Bertrand Leroy runs that, along with Richard Lander.
Yeah.
And you can actually see videos for the on.NET show, the recorded videos, right here on Channel 9. So you can go search for them, and then they'll announce when the next one of those meetups occur. And they're usually Mondays is when I've seen Bertrand run it. He's run them on Fridays every now and again, but typically on Mondays.
Usually it's on a Monday.
Yeah. So check it out. Watch on Twitter for one of those folks who will mention when they're getting ready to host the next show.
Yeah.
Cool.
Perfect. Another thing I want to talk about, especially when you talk about the importance of contributors, is friendly feedback and code reviews.
Yeah, right. And friendly feedback is something that it's tough for some folks in our industry, because they'll look at your code and, oh, this, I don't like
it's
this.
Terrible. Look
yes.
at me. Yeah.
Mm, okay. So what do we know about friendly feedback and code reviews?
Well, I'll give you an example. This is something that happened to me when I made my first pull request, and this was the feedback I got. This is simple. Why don't you get it?
Oh.
It was like a punch in the face.
Yeah.
It was like, am I stupid? It was a terrible experience.
Oh.
And, you know, I never went back to that repo.
No. Why would you?
To the repo.
This person is clearly saying, go away.
Yeah, go away. I don't want you here.
Mm.
And, you know, this was actually a conversation that I had with a lot of the maintainers I talked to. Like, I did a set of interviews. And I was like, what are you doing to support people?
Right.
And they said, you know, we don't want experienced people, but we'd prefer them. But we do want to encourage people from everywhere.
Okay.
So I showed them this, and they're like, and they, some of them admitted that they've done this before. Mm. And they don't even think about that they're doing it.
Okay.
So one person I met actually customizes something.
Okay.
So to make sure that he's always polite.
Yes.
Thanks for participating. To learn more, please check this out. And then he'll put a post.
Okay.
And let's say if you haven't done something accurately, and then please come back.
That is so easy to say, please come back.
Yeah, and like, he gave this to me, I put it in here.
Yeah.
He always has people coming back.
Okay.
He always has
people
coming back.
Sure, you're polite, you're not saying no, you're encouraging further interaction.
And it's really, really important.
Okay, yeah.
It's an important step that we need to make in the open source community, or even if you're just doing anything with product development, is just give as much friendly feedback as you possibly can.
Oh, yeah.
Because you are growing your project more and more and more.
Absolutely.
And that takes you, so it basically took him from 50 contributors to 900.
Okay. That there's, say no more, you've sold me.
You sold me.
Be polite. Be nice.
Be nice. It's so nice. It makes you happy.
Yes.
It's like you're nice to someone. It will make your day.
Absolutely.
That's even if you're doing it for jealous, like completely selfish reasons, be nice.
I'm not completely selfish. Not at all. Very cool. Okay.
It's really cool. So that's something I really strongly encourage, and something I'm also consciously doing when people ask me about things about ASP.NET Core and .NET Core. I just like, oh, okay. Because sometimes you do see people saying, yeah, I already wrote about this.
Mm.
Just, it's okay. You give it to them, they'll pass it on to the next person.
Okay.
Yeah. So just Very cool. Move it, send it forward. So what's next?
What is next?
Yeah.
What should be those next steps that folks take after they're done watching this video, whether it's live now or at some point in the future? And hello, future people who are watching this
Hi.
On a recording.
Hello, future.
So, yeah.
Future
so
me.
What are those next steps? We have a
Yeah, so
here.
This is, I love, you know, I love how GitHub has an icon for pretty much anything.
They do. This Octocat has been in so many different costumes.
Iron Man. I'm trying to get them to do Wonder Woman with an afro, which is something I'm very well known for.
Okay.
So Phil Hack, if you're listening, please make that happen. But like this is their symbol for cloning a repo.
Gotcha. Okay.
I mean forking a repo, which I think is so cute because it's the same thing. It's just a different version. It's you.
Yeah, it really does show that you're taking a copy of it, and it's your copy that you can change and put polka dots on.
Yeah. That
cool.
That is one banging cat. The cat looks amazing. And the thing is that you use the code, use it. Like, you're going to fork it, use it. Don't just, like, have it sitting there. Don't be afraid to poke at it. A lot of people are like, but if I play around with it and I ruin it, I'm like, no, it's your copy.
It's your private copy.
It's your copy.
Okay.
So
and then
it's
I can
fine.
I can take a copy locally, make changes, break things.
Break things. You're hurting nobody at all.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. So it's your copy. Use it. Don't just fork it and have it sit there. Don't be afraid to play around with it. What
okay.
happens if you remove this and you add this in? What if you use this library? Like, just keep on working on it.
And who knows? You might find something that performs better,
mm-hmm.
that is easier to maintain going forward, that maybe if you're doing design work, looks and feels better.
Oh, yeah. You might build the next great MVC template.
Cool. Yeah.
You might do it.
Sure.
And then contribute. If you do something cool, please bring it back.
Yeah, send it back. We'd love to see what you're working on. So these are the different repositories, different organizations, I'm sorry, on GitHub. So ASP.NET, .NET, F#, Mono, and Xamarin. So it's .NET from the server, the client, the phones. Get involved. Check it out. There's lots to see and do.
I love, yeah. I need to get involved more. Actually, my plan is by the end of the year,
yeah.
I am going to contribute to every single one of these.
It's a bold statement. You can do it.
But you know, contribution, as we talked, it could be different. I could do code in one and documentation in the other.
Sure.
Could be
sure.
an issue here, an issue there.
Okay. I need to spend time with that F# organization. I need to spend time learning F#. I don't know enough there.
Because I know it's great with computing
and
like doing all this cool data stuff.
Okay.
And like I love data. Data was where my intro to coding. So yeah, I think I should, yeah, let's make that journey together.
Okay, let's start it.
Let's start it.
Very cool.
But more importantly, we'd like you to stay connected.
Yes.
Stay in touch.
So, all right, so here's some of the different organizations, right? The on.net show, live.aspnet, that's where you can watch the community stand up for the ASP.NET group. A couple of good Twitter accounts, the .NET Foundation, ASP.NET, of course. The .NET group is at .NET, Xamarin. Code.
Yes.
What's code?
Visual Studio Code. And they have the coolest Twitter handle ever.
That is. I wish I had code.
It is the coolest Twitter handle ever. Like, at code. Like,
so simple.
So
easy
simple,
to remember.
So easy to remember. And those are the different ways you can stay connected. And
yeah.
If you want to find more about on.net, follow the .NET team.
Yes. They will tweet out when
that
occurs.
They'll tweet when it's happening.
Yep.
You'll see my face in a couple of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I'm the guy behind the scenes with the keyboard typing these things up.
So do we have any more questions?
Any other questions coming in? No more.
No more questions.
All right. So thank you very much.
Thank you
we
for
really
your time.
We really appreciate you guys checking this out. I hope you learned something about open source and how you can contribute with Microsoft, with not just our repositories, but all the other ones that are out there.
All the repos that are out there. Oh, Nancy, everything that exists out there.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Go be part of that. Be part of the family.
So check us out on Twitter. She's Lady Nagaga on
Lady
Twitter.
Lady Nagaga.
And I'm C-Sharp Fritz. We look forward to hearing more from you on Twitter.
Yeah. Thank you so much.